thousands protesting in Illinois, tens of thousands at airports across the country in response to President Trump's executive order Friday banning Syrian refugees and immigrants from seven Muslim-majority countries.
Don't distribute more hatred. Keep talking about peace. Keep talking about humanity. Keep talking about that this is not fair.
As one protester addressing a crowd of about 600 Sunday outside Willard Airport in Champaign, today we look at the effect of President Trump's executive ban on immigration across Illinois.
If people are banned from coming into the U.S. and interacting with the American people, they won't be able to tell people back home what America is really like, what the American people are really like.
That's Illinois PhD student Salah Al-Ghaithi, who's from Yemen. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. People who are directly affected by the ban and those trying to help them. Stay with us. You're listening to the 21st. Welcome. I'm Nyla Boodoo. President Trump's executive orders on immigration this weekend have sparked protests and lawsuits. Over the weekend, tens of thousands protested across the country and in airports in Illinois, from O'Hare in Chicago to Willard near Champaign.
Don't distribute more hatred. Keep talking about peace. Keep talking about humanity. Keep talking about that this is not fair. The refugees should be given a fair chance, especially the people who are trying to go through legal channels.
Coming to America for medical aid, coming to America to see their loved ones, some coming for funerals, some coming for weddings, some coming for their education. A young man from Iran at Stanford University doing his PhD, a great asset to this nation, goes back home for a visit and can't come back.
No hate, no fear!
Protests in Champaign and Chicago over the weekend. Thanks to WBEZ's Susie Ahn and WILL's Jeff Bossert for that audio. The legality of President Trump's executive order, now being questioned by a variety of federal courts, suspends immigrants and non-immigrants for 90 days from seven Muslim-majority countries: Iraq, Syria, Iran, Sudan, Libya, Somalia, and Yemen. It includes everything from refugees to travelers with visas to residents with green cards, although that's also now being questioned. While some have celebrated President Trump making good on his campaign promise, many across Illinois are alarmed. Today, we're going to be talking to people directly affected by all of this and those who are trying to help them, including a Yemeni PhD student at the University of Illinois, the director of an Illinois-based group working with Syrian refugees, and a Chicago-area rabbi whose congregation was hoping to welcome a Syrian refugee family. And as always, we would love to hear from you listening. What do you think about all of this? Give us a call. You can join our conversation at 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. Or you can tweet to 21st Show, our handle 21st Show. We wanted to start with some context, though, from NPR's David Shaper. He's been covering the protests at O'Hare over the weekend and on the line from Chicago. Hey, David, welcome back to the 21st.
Thanks for having me, Nyla.
What was the scene like at O'Hare this weekend, David? We just heard a little bit of some of the sounds from Chicago and Champaign.
Yeah, you know, it was really chaotic. I spent many hours there Saturday, starting in the afternoon and well into the evening. You know, when I first got there, there was a small group of attorneys who were huddling, trying to identify people who were waiting for loved ones, for, you know, picking up people who were flying in from overseas. There's a flight from Tehran, for example, that and to see if anybody was being detained. There were rumors or talk that people were being detained and held, interviewed for several hours because they fell under the executive order banning entry into the country. So it was just kind of a little bit of trying to figure out who's being held and what's going on. And as the day went on, more and we found out that there were, you know, more than a dozen, I think it was 16 at least, that the attorneys there knew of people who were being detained. The number of attorneys coming to help out grew. The protesters showed up, and into the night it got quite crazy with the just huge protests and so much confusion about what was going on and who was being detained and why.
David, you've covered lots of protests over the year. I would say you've had your fair share of them, right? What was the tone of this like? What were the people like?
You know, I found it really, really interesting, Nilo, that there's so many people there who, you know, I talked to a few who said, well, first of all, it's a Saturday night. It's like, you know, like couples on date night decided, you know, screw the dinner, screw the movie. We're going
to
go.
We're going to drive to O'Hare.
Yeah, yeah. Families, you know, like their outing, like, you know, little kids, families, parents who are saying, you know, this is something that's important to us to do as a family, to speak out on this issue. And even a lot of people who said that they had never protested before, that there's no reason, but they felt like this crossed a line to them that got them to protest. This and some of them were saying, yeah, my first protest was the Women's March a week before. Now I'm coming out for this because I feel like this administration has gone in a direction that they don't approve of. And I found that very interesting because you tend to sometimes when you cover a lot of protests that I've been covering
kind of see the same people, right?
Years, you see some of the same people or the same types of people. This was not your NATO protest, let's put it that way.
So that's sort of the ordinary citizen side of this. We've certainly seen a lot of Democratic lawmakers, whether they are mm-hmm. city officials like Mayor Rahm Emanuel, Attorney General Lisa Madigan, joining 15 other Democratic state attorney generals saying this is unconstitutional, unlawful, un-American. What are we hearing from Illinois lawmakers? What has the political response been to this?
Well, you know, there were a few members of Congress who were there. Joining in the protests, speaking at a news conference that they had. Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky from the North Suburbs was one of the more vocal people there Saturday night, and that continued into Sunday. Senator Dick Durbin and Congresswoman Schakowsky and others held a big event, kind of a just like a Know Your Rights for Immigration event Sunday afternoon in Chicago at Sullivan High School on the north side, a pretty diverse neighborhood in Rogers Park where this was already previously set up, just people trying to figure out, okay, how do we navigate the legal immigration process? And it turned into this big event about, because a lot of people are scared now, you know, who can get in, who can't be, if I have a green card, if I'm a, these are people who are legal residents, I should say, of this country and have been living here for quite some time, and now they're being detained and questioned and faced with the possibility of being deported. It kind of sent a shiver through a lot of folks who think that it's appears to be a whole new ball game that they're in. So
yeah, David, what are we hearing from other prominent leaders in Illinois? I'm thinking about Cardinal Supich. What did he say over the weekend about this?
You know, I thought Cardinal Supich had one of the more poignant sort of responses to this event, and he condemned the executive order and the detainments that resulted as a result of it, and said that this has proved to be a dark moment in U.S. history. I think that's pretty strong language from the leader of the Catholic Church in Chicago. He said that this, you know, the United States has a long history of welcoming refugees who are fleeing for their lives. Catholic organizations have spent have always been involved in helping resettle families. I remember as a kid, our family sponsoring Cambodian refugees and helping them out. So for him to condemn this is that saying that the world is watching as we abandon our commitments to American values is pretty strong language.
Right. Similar, obviously, we saw what the Pope said earlier this weekend.
What the Pope has been saying as well, yes.
Mm-hmm. NPR's David Shaper, he's a national correspondent based in the Midwest, joining us from Chicago. David, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me, Nilo.
We're talking to all of you also about how you feel about President Trump's executive orders regarding immigration. You can join our conversation. You can give us a call. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21STShow. Rachel on Twitter says President Trump's ban was poorly thought out with no clear rationale. What do you think? You can join us. As you just heard, there's lots of legal challenges that are being made to President Trump's order. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights posted a Twitter message on Monday saying that this discrimination on nationality, that's a quote, violates international human rights codes. The Chicago Tribune reported this morning that more than 40% of the more than 30,000 refugees who've settled in the Chicagoland area in the past 15 years are from those seven countries specifically mentioned in the president's executive order. According to that story, almost 12,000 refugees have been resettled in Chicago. Rockford, Wheaton, Aurora, and Skokie also have resettled the highest amounts of refugees. Since 2007, 1,116 refugees have come from Syria. Joining me now is Suzanne Akras-Sahloul. She's executive director of the Syrian Community Network and on the line with us from the Chicago area. Hi, Suzanne. Welcome back to the 21st.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Suzanne, you work closely with Syrian refugees. You yourself are Syrian. You were born in Syria. I know last time we had you on the show, you talked about how many refugees have become your friends. What are you hearing from folks in Illinois this weekend in the refugee community?
Well, just to be clear that so far in Illinois, we have about 800 to 900 Syrian refugees in the state of Illinois. But nationwide, we have about 18,000 refugees that have been resettled. So here in Chicago, I feel the refugees themselves have been reaching out and asking what will happen to us. Will we be deported? Will our refugee status be taken away and then will we be sent back? And I don't blame them for their concerns because this is really a difficult situation to be in. Many have just arrived or some of them have just recently received their green cards and were looking to the path to citizenship. And so these are concerns that they're having. And, you know, we have families who were waiting for their loved ones to come to be resettled in Chicago. Actually, we have one lady, her name is Iman. She came here with her three children and she was waiting for her oldest son and her daughter-in-law. Daughter-in-law just gave birth to a baby girl and they went through the vetting process and they were supposed to be coming anytime this month. And now there's, with this ban, they may not be able to make it.
So it sounds like you're saying a lot of people are questioning refugees who are here if they will even be allowed to stay here. Is that what people are wondering?
Yeah, the refugees themselves were asking. Yesterday we had an event, a Get to Know Your Rights event with Representative Kelly Cassidy and Senator Durbin Representative Jan Schakowsky came out in support of the refugees, and they told them that we will help you, we will protect you. They were attorneys on site who connected with the refugees and to offer their pro bono services if they needed to apply for family members to come here or if they needed help to make sure that their status does not change. There is a lot of concern in that regard. But luckily, we live in the most amazing city of people who are looking to support. Just, I was talking to our volunteer coordinator, and she told me that in the last 3 days, we've had over 70 applications submitted because of this, after this, executive order came out. So I feel really good that we live in Chicago and that there's such a pouring of support for the refugee families.
Suzanne, how do you see this President Trump's actions affecting communities across Illinois?
In some ways, there's some good. You know, I always try to look in the good in everything. On Saturday, I went out to the airport, where they were protesting and, there were people who were stuck inside. They were either visa holders or green card holders. Some they were Muslim and they were not able to, be released, out. And there were so many people there at the airport, close to 2,000 people, all chanting, "Let them in, no hate, no fear, refugees, welcome here." And it really was a beautiful moment where so many people, religious and diverse backgrounds, were there. And in some ways, it's brought the Chicago and the Illinois community together under this, unified in this fight against the executive order. If I want to look at the good in something, this would be the light at the end of the tunnel, that we have so many people who care about the refugee families and not just the refugees, but the immigrants who have, maybe dual status or dual, visas or whatever. But they've all come out in support of these people.
Suzanne Akrasahlul is executive director of the Syrian Community Network. And Suzanne, can I ask you, you're a U.S. citizen. I know you were born in Syria. I know you've shared stories on our program in the past about what it meant for you to grow up in this country as a refugee. How did you feel personally about the events that happened this weekend?
Yeah, of course. I felt very hurt. I represent, I'm a Syrian American, I'm a Muslim, I'm a woman, you know, so all of these things are on the Trump ban list, I guess. So I feel hurt. I feel disappointed. I feel that disappointed in our lawmakers who are silent. There are many who have spoken out, but now we need everyone to speak out against this executive order. For someone who was born in Syria and I became a citizen at the age of 18, of course I worried. You know, I have dual citizenship. You know, I worry about my status, of course. I remember after 9/11, this was a question also, that people who were naturalized citizens versus citizens people who were born here. And so I hope that it doesn't reach to that level that, you know, even naturalized citizens will be targeted. But because I am a Syrian American, because I'm Muslim, because I'm a woman, I feel this is the time for us to come out and to rally and to join coalitions with our faith partners and civic partners, and to really champion the rights of all immigrants and all refugees, not just Syrian refugees. All refugees are welcome, and we need to work as much as we can to try in some way, somehow, to either get this decision reversed, if not, at least rallying the communities around us in support of everyone. And again, if I want to look at the good in everything, it's really uniting the Chicago community under this banner of that we don't accept this executive order.
Suzanne Akrasahlul is executive director of the Syrian Community Network. Suzanne, thanks for being with us. Thanks for taking the time today.
Thank you for having me.
Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Coming up, we're going to be talking about these immigration orders, how it's affecting institutions of higher learning across Illinois. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Today, we're talking about Illinois and President Trump's executive order on immigration. Those orders signed on Friday suspends nationals of Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen from entering the U.S. for 90 days. It also indefinitely bans Syrian refugees from entering the U.S., suspending all refugee admissions for 120 days. While there are tens of thousands of people who were demonstrating in the streets this weekend, there were other protests, too. As of Monday morning, more than 12,000 academics and researchers in the United States, including 40 Nobel laureates, signed a petition against this executive order. About 125 of those people were from Illinois universities. It said, in part, the people whose status in the U.S. would be reconsidered under this executive order are students, friends, colleagues, and members of our community. The University of Illinois has one of the country's largest international student populations. A statement from University of Illinois System President Timothy Killeen this morning to students, faculty, and staff said that they are greatly concerned about the negative consequences for members of our community and their family arising from this order. They said, "We want to assure you we are monitoring events closely. We're working with other universities, national organizations, legal counsel, and government officials to support and protect all of our international faculty, visiting scholar, and students." Salah Al-Gaithi is a PhD student in communications at the University of Illinois. He's from Yemen, and he's in studio with me. Hi, Salah. Welcome to The 21st. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I know that this ban turned something as simple as going home to visit your family into something that would be very risky, putting your PhD at risk. But I also guess that it's not just being from Yemen that's making you feel unsafe right now. And I'm thinking about the horrific events last night in Quebec City at the mosque, six people killed during evening prayer. So I guess my first question is just, how are you doing? How are you feeling right now?
It was awkward to start the weekend at around 5 p.m. on Friday, learning about the new executive order. I was like, does that mean I'm not welcome in the country anymore? How are my students going to look at me, going to think about me? How are my colleagues going to deal with me? Is anybody going to appreciate the situation I am in or not? And then just minutes later, I got this email from the head of the International Student Scholar Services Office, and he was like, everybody is welcome on campus. You're here legally. Let us know if we can help in any way. That helped make me feel a little better, but I still was concerned about my own safety and the safety of my family. So a million thoughts crossed my mind at that point, and I am concerned not only about my inability to come back in case I leave the country on a temporary basis. I'm also concerned about my safety, as I said. What happened in Quebec last night, what happened in Texas 2 days ago when they burnt the Islamic Center to the ground. Thankfully, nobody was hurt. But if things are going to escalate in that direction, it is difficult to anticipate what might happen in the near future.
And you are getting your PhD here. Do you feel like you're worried also not just about your PhD and the process of getting your PhD academically, but then I guess also your family, because your family lives here?
Absolutely, yes. So in case I have to leave the country for whatsoever reason, for family-related reasons, for research purposes, I might not be able to come back and get my degree. And when I go home and not be able to come back, and then people start asking me, did you say that the United States was a hospitable country? I was like, of course, yes. And then I don't know what I'm going to be able to say now after what's happening.
How many more years do you have before you finish your PhD?
I just started this fall, so I'm looking at 4 more years to go.
And do you, I guess it's a difficult question to ask now, what happens after those 4 years are over? Is this a country right now you feel like you want to stay in?
That's always an option. I would love to stay, absolutely. But at this point, I'm questioning even my ability to continue my program at the University of Illinois. But when I came here, yes, absolutely. I was considering the opportunity of me getting a job here after I graduate. But now it's just difficult to.
What do you want people to know about, people who are listening to this? What else do you want them to know about this situation that you and so many other people are in right now in the U.S.?
I want them to know that we appreciate all the support and solidarity we get from the American people, but not everybody back home knows of this. There are people who only know what the media tells them. And if people are banned from coming into the U.S. and interacting with the American people and not through media, they won't be able to tell people back home what America is really like, what the American people are really like. And so if we keep people from Yemen and the Middle East outside the United States, they won't be able to understand how beautiful life here is and how great the American people are.
Salah Al-Ghaithi is a PhD student in communications at the University of Illinois. Salah, thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you for having me here.
In studio with me as well is Brighton Godfrey. He's an associate professor of computer science at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And Brighton, we're just talking about how this might affect education. You teach computer science where you have students from the countries in question. And it's not just students, it's professors. I'm wondering how you see this affecting your day-to-day job.
It has an immediate effect. There are students from really around the world. Many of them, it's their dream to come to the United States and study, and come to even the University of Illinois in particular and study, since this is one of the top schools in many fields, including computer science. But we are lucky to be one of the top schools, in large part because we get the top talent from the entire world. If we now exclude certain classes of students, that puts the university at a disadvantage in recruiting. And then, you know, more immediately, there are a lot of people's lives that are impacted from that executive order.
I know you were sharing on Facebook about different colleagues, you know, of their lives being impacted, professors from Iran, other family members talking about how much they're worried about not being able to have families visit And then I also worry about the academic side, because this is part of the petition that was signed saying there's a concern about conferences, people traveling. Are you worried about how much this affects the flow of academic exchange between whether it's in computer science or other industries, how this is going to affect how if this will isolate U.S. academics?
It will have that effect to some extent. So, and I've worked with multiple students and professors from impacted countries. You know, one of the PhD students that I've worked with finished her PhD, published a paper that was accepted based on that work that she spent years on, and now cannot attend the conference to present that paper. So that is, you know, a negative impact for that person, of course, very...
And for her career.
For her career, also for the university.
You're also the co-founder of a tech company, Veriflow, and we've seen over the weekend, we saw companies like Google and Lyft speaking out very clearly against this. How do you see this executive order affecting the tech industry in the U.S.?
Well, I personally know multiple individuals who were graduate students here in the United States, went on to either found a startup or join a startup. One of them has, you know, become a product line at Cisco, and that individual went on to become a faculty member at MIT. There are, you know, many of the students that come here, and I think there are about, you know, from Iran alone, which is the country that sends the largest number of students to the United States from the countries that are affected by the order, over 12,000 students from Iran here in the United States. Many of those students stay after they graduate, and many of them found companies or join startups, join other companies, contribute to the economy, and including, you know, even if we just look within the state of Illinois, if we look at all international students, their contribution to the economy while they're here is estimated about $1.6 billion.
Yeah, and I wonder if you see a broader effect on businesses, the high-tech industry, whether that's Illinois or across the country in terms of now competing for top talent?
I think it may have that effect, yeah, both direct effect as well as I would expect that there's some now risk or there will be a perceived risk that others beyond those directly affected by Friday's executive orders may be impacted in the future.
Brighton Godfrey is an associate professor of computer science at the University of Illinois. Thanks for being with me.
Glad to be here.
We're talking about Illinois and President Trump's executive orders on immigration on Friday, the protest demonstrations, how Illinois has been reacting to this. The Illinois Coalition for Immigrants and Refugee Rights is a statewide coalition of more than 130 organizations. They organize immigrant and refugee communities and advocate on immigrant-related issues. Damian Kogan is its organizing director and joins us now. Hi, Damian. Welcome to the 21st.
Hi. Good to be with you.
Damian, what is ICIR doing right now to help your different partner organizations deal with this?
We are taking a two-prong approach to address this and other challenges that we're seeing from the administration. First, in terms of our legal defense strategy, we are working with a network of nonprofit attorneys that are available to provide legal assistance to anyone that may be concerned. We're also offering a curriculum of Know Your Rights trainings and workshops throughout the state, and we're working with partner organizations to provide those assistance and trainings to whoever's interested. We also have the second prong, which is our organizing and advocacy approach. As we saw over the weekend, there were large mobilizations at O'Hare. We're going to continue to use direct action to call on the rollback of this Islamic policy that's veiled as a national security executive order. It's clear that there's been no evidence that this executive order will make any of us safer and places us in the wrong side of history. So we're going to continue to do the direct action approach, partnering with legal assistance, resources, and also pushing for local, national, and state-level solutions in response to actively push back against these anti-immigrant, anti-refugee policies.
I mean, you mentioned security. President Trump this morning has been especially vocal about defending this travel ban, saying it's not a ban on Muslims. It's about terror and keeping our country safe. Is that how it's being received among the people that you all work with?
Well, I think in anticipation of this, it's clear that this is a backdoor ban on Muslims. President Trump, as a candidate, spoke about banning Muslims, and he specifically chose predominantly Muslim countries for this ban. Now, I'm not an attorney, but there were 16 attorney generals that issued a statement yesterday calling the executive order unlawful, including Illinois' Attorney General Lisa Madigan, and they avowed to work together to ensure that the federal government obeys the Constitution, because from their analysis, it's unconstitutional since it unlawfully targets anyone from their national origin or faith. Additionally, you know, there, if you look at the evidence of the national security issue, these types of policies historically have not addressed the root causes and do not actually function to actually keep Americans safe, based on what we've seen in terms of root causes of these types of security threats.
Damon, you mentioned sort of the two-pronged approach that ICIRR is taking, the legal part. I had a question for you about that, because we've seen reports of lawyers embedded at airports across the country. How important is it for people coming into the country now to have access to immediate legal counsel?
So the recommendation that we're making is that anyone from these countries that are in the United States right now refrain from any travel without consulting with an attorney. At our website, if you go to www.icr.org/protection, you can find a comprehensive list of nonprofits offering low-cost or free legal services with attorneys or authorized legal assistance providers. But right now, it's incredibly important that there be a legal strategy in addition to an organizing and advocacy approach. And we feel that that combination, both the legal assistance providers and the lawyers that were at the airports, not only in Chicago but nationally, in addition to the people doing the mass mobilizations, are what helped push the pressure to put the stay on the band. And that's what we're going to continue to do until these types of policies are completely reversed.
Damian, to that second point, earlier we heard NPR's David Shaper talking about the crowds that he saw at O'Hare this weekend. He said some of them are people who have never really, he said, sort of not the kind of usual people you see at Chicago protests. He said some people were saying they had come to the March on Washington. They had done marches the weekend before. They felt like this was another time for them. For people who maybe haven't been involved, how are you hoping to capitalize on people who maybe haven't been involved in protests to keep them involved in what you all are fighting for?
Absolutely. So I think part of that comes from a response that people are generally recognizing that this type of policy puts us on the wrong side of history. And we've been there before. We've seen this when the U.S. has rejected Jewish refugees fleeing Germany and Europe during World War II. We've seen this targeted towards Japanese and Chinese policies in the past. And we see that these types of policies actually result in people losing their life when the United States sends a message that they would rather let these refugees that are fleeing dire situations go back to their home countries and risk death than to come into the United States and contribute to our country and state. So what we're asking people to do that are compelled to take action on this is there's two immediate things. One is that people can sign up through icirr.org/riseup to help advance these efforts. And these are efforts that it's not only the refugee communities, but immigrants have been targeted and other vulnerable communities as well that we're in solidarity with. Secondly, the airport action specifically had been led by one of our member organizations called the Arab American Action Network. So they're the ones that had been the lead and we've been supporting on these sort of quick actions. So our recommendation is for more information specifically about that,
to go to them. Damian, sorry, I'm afraid. Yeah, sorry to cut you off there. Sorry, I didn't have a chance to finish, but we're out of time. I want to thank Damian Kogan, organizing director with the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights. Stay tuned. We're going to continue this conversation on the 21st. You're listening to The 21st. We're talking about Illinois and President Trump's executive orders on immigration. You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show like Paul just did. He said, further effects of anti-Muslim reaction upon academia is the narrowing of the cultural breadth of these institutions. He called it xenophobia. What do you think? You can tweet to us as well. Many of us still remember the pictures of the dirty, scared 5-year-old Syrian child, Omran Dakhnish, in Aleppo after he was pulled out of the rubble after the airstrike. That photo went viral last fall. That picture, along with many others of Syrian children, led two Chicago moms to begin a campaign on social media. They used the hashtag #StandWithAleppo. Their movement has extra urgency now with this weekend's news of President Trump's executive ban on immigration. We're joined on the line now by one of the lead organizers of the campaign, Janet Fouts. Janet, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you.
So, Janet, the two moms who started all of this are in Chicago. You're actually based in California. How did you get involved with this?
Well, I was really fortunate that I saw several photos of children that they were posting with the hashtag #StandWithAleppo, and I was really moved by it and wanted to find a way to get involved. So I did a little research and found out who was really driving this campaign and contacted the organizers.
And how have you all been responding since the news of President Trump's executive order regarding the immigration ban broke this past weekend?
Well, you know, Stand with Aleppo was started around children, and I think that it's really important that we remember the children and how innocent and how out of control they are. And so this ban is just really motivating us to remind people of that and to really push for no ban, no wall.
And I know in particular when you said that when you look at the tens of thousands of people who are protesting across the country, including at several airports across Illinois, we've been discussing, you've said the protest is important, but it can't stop there. What kind of action are you all encouraging people to take now?
Well, you know, we really think that the protests are really bringing a lot of awareness, but awareness is only the first step. We need to be reaching out and supporting our Congress people who are agreeing with us and are opposing this, and also reach out to the opposition and talk to them and encourage them to see reason and to think more about humanity than they are about their jobs.
Well, and I know that the hashtag Stand with Aleppo campaign is, as you said, not just about reaching out to people who already agree with you, but reaching across the aisle to people who disagree. In your experience, Janet, what's the best way to do that?
You know, I think it's really important that we bring a little kindness to how we are talking to people. It's really easy to block everybody who doesn't agree with you on social media, but that's not going to accomplish anything. Putting up walls isn't going to accomplish anything. We need to really be thinking about what their position is and actually talking to people to better understand what their position is and finding a way that we can come to some common ground.
Do you worry that actions like this weekend will just further polarize people?
You know, I do, but I think that it's really necessary that everyone stand up for what they believe in. And we need to be out there, we need to be talking to people, and we need to be not fighting about it.
Janet Fouts is one of the lead organizers of the Stand with Aleppo campaign, begun by two Chicago moms, Becky Carroll and Wendy Whiteham, last fall. Janet, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. On Friday night, a synagogue in the Chicago suburbs welcomed what may have been the last Syrian refugee family to enter the U.S. They came in this past weekend. Faith communities have a longstanding tradition of welcoming and helping refugees being resettled into the country, as we were hearing earlier comments that Cardinal Supich was making this weekend about this. Rabbi Evan Moffick is a senior rabbi with Congregation Salel on Chicago's north side. His Reform congregation had been working with the nonprofit agency Refugee One to welcome a refugee family. He joins us now from Highland Park to share more about how that is going. Rabbi Moffick, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for taking the time to be with me.
Thanks, Nyla. Delighted to be here.
Rabbi, what do you all know what's happening or what was happening with the family that you all wanted to help resettle here?
You know, we're not sure. You know, we have an enormous number of volunteers, and, you know, we're still working with Refugee One to see what, you know, what we can do. But, you know, we're really not sure.
Why was it important for your congregation to be involved with this? When did you all start working on this?
You know, it's been bubbling up for a long time. I think even throughout the election, you know, we're immigrant people. You know, we came here in droves throughout the 20th century, and we have memories of our immigrant ancestors. And so I think that our congregation has been aware of the rhetoric for the last 2 years and been increasingly concerned. And, you know, as it got worse and worse, I think our people got more and more concerned. And we probably should have been doing more, you know, a year ago, but it really ramped up, I'd say, the last couple months. And literally when I talked about potentially adopting a refugee family, the response was an outpouring. I mean, I think people in the congregation were waiting for an opportunity to do something. And I wish we could have done more earlier, but, you know, we're doing all we can now.
Rabbi, what was it like for you all, for your congregation on Friday evening? I wonder what your services were like as you all were hearing the news of the immigration order, the significance of it also coming on Holocaust Remembrance Day last Friday.
I think there was just overwhelming concern. You know, I think it's been something where our congregants have been involved in lots of ways. I've been getting lots of emails asking what more we can do. I think we're still looking for some clarity about what more we can do. You know, obviously writing our senators and congressmen, speaking out. But I think there's kind of a feeling of dread, but also of concern and of energy. I mean, you know, I've been at my congregation for 8 years, and I've never seen as much energy and commitment to doing something for the community. It's actually been remarkably inspiring in a desperate time.
Rabbi, I know you and I were chatting yesterday when I asked you to come on the program about the significance of this order coming on Holocaust Remembrance Day last Friday.
Yes.
What did that mean to you?
It was extraordinarily depressing because if we Jews have learned one lesson, you know, from the experience of the Holocaust, it's that Jews are never the only victim. And when a country starts demonizing one group, you can be sure that they're going to be demonizing others. And so to see immigrants and refugees demonized and then blocked in this way portends very bad for the future. I mean, as an act in itself, it's horrible coming on Holocaust Remembrance Day, where we think about all the Jews who could have left Germany, who could have left Europe, but were turned away and did not have a place to go as refugees. And aside from that, it's a bad sign for the future that when immigrants are seen as murderers and rapists and thieves, as we heard from, you know, President Trump during the campaign, we become more concerned about what happens in the future and what happens to other minorities.
Rabbi, you signed a petition with 1,500 other rabbis against the Trump administration, talking about what we're talking about now. And I want you to be clear that you don't see this as, do you see this as a political issue, this issue of immigrants or refugees? Do you see this as a moral issue? I know that it's always tough when faith leaders sort of have to juggle that line of not wanting to take political positions on things.
Right. I see it unequivocally as a moral issue. You know, I think there are political ramifications, of course. I mean, we can debate what's the best way to have effective border control and to protect our sovereignty and so forth. And these are political matters that there are multiple of viewpoints on, and I wouldn't take a position on one of those or another. But when it comes to, are we a nation of immigrants, and does our country illustrate our values, then I take a stand. And I think with refugees and with being a country that welcomes immigrants, I think it's unequivocally clear where Jewish values lie. And it not just Jewish values. I mean, I think this is people from across the religious spectrum. I mean, I have friends who are evangelical ministers, and they share my concern, and they share in some ways the disgust and are speaking out against the recent executive orders.
Rabbi, I'm thinking about a book you wrote a couple years ago, What Every Christian Needs to Know About Passover, what it means and why it matters. I know that interfaith issues, also the idea of working with other faiths is a really important thing for you. I wonder how you see this moment right now in America as we look at different faith communities. What role do you think faith communities should be playing in these conversations?
Well, I've been having this conversation with lots of friends who are ministers, who are involved with synagogues and churches, and the universal feeling is that we have a tremendously important role to play, that the message of our faith message, that every human being is created in the image of God and worthy of dignity and respect, that's under attack, and we need to speak out for that. And that doesn't mean we are constantly going to Capitol Hill or you know, become political activists, but really become sort of spiritual activists, talking about our values as a country. And I think it's actually an opportunity for religious groups to work together. There are certain, I mean, we're different in a lot of ways. We have different sets of beliefs, but there are certain core values that Jews, Christians, Muslims, people of faith and good people of humanity share, and that's a certain sense of the dignity of every human being. And we also love our country. I mean, America is the most religious country in the democratic Western world, and part of that is because the values of America align with the universal values of our tradition. So in a way, I think it's our responsibility as Jews and as Americans to speak out, and I think we'd be shirking our duty if we didn't.
What do you say to people who disagree, who say this is something we need to do for our security? This is something we need to do to keep the country safe. This is something we need to do to keep the country safe from another terrorist attack.
I respect other points of view, and I listen. I mean, my general approach is I generally don't question people's motives. If somebody believes that we need to do these executive orders to protect the security of our country, I think it's important to listen. But then I think it's also important to look at facts and to look at what really happens. And if we see that they truly do not serve to protect our national security, then we need to do something different. So I think it's important to debate it, but it's also important to find clarity around the truth and to speak out for our values. So I think we have to be mindful, of course, of the reality. And we need to have an immigration system. We need to have checks. We need to have background checks. I'm not a open borders guy, but I think we have to also balance our values with our security. And it seems that that balance has shifted. So I think we have to engage the other side. Fortunately, I haven't encountered much opposition, especially among my congregation and my community and my friends. There really is almost a universal idea that we need to stand up for our value as a nation of immigrants.
Rabbi Evan Mofik is with Congregation Solel in Highland Park. Rabbi Mofik, thanks for being with us. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Nyla. Great to talk.
That's all the time we have for today. Unfortunately, we didn't have a chance to get to State Treasurer Mike Frerichs announced some programs this morning. We're going to be featuring that on tomorrow's program, looking at disability savings accounts, a new statewide initiative that Illinois has been leading and taking part in. So tune in tomorrow for that conversation with State Treasurer Michael Frerichs. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app if you search for The 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. All of those links, every other way to contact us. We'd love feedback from you if you want to leave us a voicemail, send us an email, find us on social media. It's all at our website, 21stshow.org. Speaking of social media, if you follow us on Twitter, search for 21ST Show. We live tweet during the show with more analysis and background on what we're talking about today. Lots of information about immigration, all those reports we mentioned. That's all there if you follow our handle. On our Facebook page, if you search for The 21st to like us, you can comment on what we're working on or post questions or comments you want us to ask on air. We're produced by Haula Delahi, Christine Herman, and Sean Newman. Abrar Alhiti is our intern. Technical direction comes from Jason Croft with help from Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our executive editor. Special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. I'm Nyla Boudou. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.